Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Papal Audience. Pope Benedict speaks about the 6th century Irish monk and missionary St. Columban during his weekly general audience. Saving lives. We find out how the Catholic Church in India is in the forefront in the battle against the soaring rate of AIDS, HIV infections. And life for seekers. An ex-gangster, a former prostitute and an archbishop are just some of the people featured in a new Catholic lifestyle magazine launched in Britain this week. Here in the Vatican, Pope Benedict spoke about the life and work of the 6th century Irish monk and missionary St. Columban at his Wednesday general audience. Lydia O'Kane reports.
Pope Benedict arrived into St. Peter's Square in the fondly named Pope Mobile to the cheers of all the pilgrims and tourists present. After taking his seat under the shade of a large canopy, the Holy Father continued his serialisation of figures of the early church. This week he turned to an Irish saint, Columban, who was one of the many Irish monks who contributed to the re-evangelisation of Europe in the early Middle Ages.
Columban made his monastic profession in Bangor and was ordained a priest. At the age of 50, he left the monastery to begin missionary work in Europe, where entire regions had lapsed into paganism. Beginning in Brittany, Columban and his companions established monasteries at Angry and Luxeuil. These became centers for the spread of the monastic and missionary ideals brought by the monks from their native Ireland. Columban introduced to Europe the Irish penitential discipline, including private confession.
The Pope went on to say that this saint revived and nourished the Christian roots of Europe and still serves as an example for us today.
His stern moral teachings led to conflict with the local bishops and the Frankish court, resulting in the exile of the Irish monks, first to Rhineland and then to Italy. At Bobbio, where he established a great monastic center, Columban worked for the conversion of the Arian Lombards and the restoration of unity with the Bishop of Rome. It was there that he died, leaving behind not only the example of an austere monastic life, but also corpus of writings which shaped the monastic culture of the Middle Ages and thus nourished the Christian roots of Europe.
At the conclusion of the audience, Pope Benedict offered warm greetings to all the English-speaking pilgrims, including those from Thailand and Nebraska in the US.
I offer warm greeting and prayerful good wishes to Cardinal Kitbuncho and the pilgrims from Thailand who are present today, and also to the large group of delegates from the Pope Paul VI Institute in Nebraska, to all the English-speaking visitors from England, Scotland, Scandinavia, Korea, and the United States of America, I extend a warm welcome. May God bless you all.
Taking a final turn around St. Peter's Square in the Popemobile, the Holy Father waved to all those gathered before returning inside the Vatican. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Globally, an estimated 33 million people are infected with the HIV virus that causes AIDS, and 25 million have died so far from the fatal and incurable disease. These are just some of the latest statistics that have emerged from this week's high-level UN meeting on HIV/AIDS held in New York. Throughout the world, the Catholic Church is in the forefront of those helping to care for those suffering from HIV/AIDS. And the Holy See's permanent observer mission to the UN in New York hosted a side event to the UN meeting. This seminar was entitled Treating, Preventing and Caring, three approaches to addressing HIV and AIDS, and particularly focused on how to prevent mothers from transmitting the disease to their children during birth. UN figures show that half of all people living with HIV now are women, and that percentage is growing around the globe. One nation where the AIDS-HIV infection is spreading fast is India, that has the world's third largest HIV-positive caseload. Indian health workers say the disease is making its way into the general population and is also spreading to rural areas, whilst doctors there report increasingly seeing women infected by their husbands. Father Alex Vadakumthala is head of the Commission for Health of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of India. He spoke to me about the reasons why HIV/AIDS is spreading so fast in his country.
India is a large country and the population is such a large population. So even a 0.1 decimal increase will be a huge increase when we consider, because it's a subcontinent. However, with that, the rate of infection is increasing at an alarming rate in all parts of the country, in fact. One of the reasons why, because the true message for prevention is not going across the country, especially into the rural areas and the remote villages, particularly among women and the vulnerable population.
Is it also a question of behaviour patterns, though? I mean, people are migrating for work and maybe the men are not being faithful to their wives and then they bring the infection back to their wives?
You are perfectly right, because the migration to the major metros or the cities is common, especially, for example, in the state of Uttar Pradesh, which is the largest populated state in India, and it has also the highest number of migration to the in search of job, and often they don't migrate together as a family, but only the men migrate for the job. And when you are alone in a city, there is also, you are prone to have high risk behavior, and it affects, it helps spread the disease.
I gather that the Indian government now gives drugs for free to HIV/AIDS patients. But what percentage of these people are getting the drugs? Presumably it's not all of them.
No. It was in 2000, the target was for 2005, I think 5 million population on ART. But still we have not achieved the target. But we have the antiretroviral therapy centers across the country, especially in the government facilities. For the first time in the church sector, we have already two centers, one at St. John's Medical College in Bangalore and another one in a hospital called Belle Hospital in Maharashtra. So the ARV rollout is, we are trying with the, both in the government sector and the private sector, is going on with the target of reaching out to more people to give the ART. But at the same time, it's not just medicine, that it has to be coupled with nutritional program and also care and support programs. With the funding from the Global Fund, the church is establishing 45 community care centers in 5 North Indian states. The first 20 centers are already started functional, and within next 1 year, we'll have another 25 more. Yes.
But India is a huge country, and yes, it's got very big distances. So for people who live a long way from the big cities where these centers tend to be located, it must be a big problem for them to travel these vast distances to get treatment, not to mention the cost of the travel.
In fact, just yesterday, I was in a place called Mokkama, where the Nazareth Sisters have a hospital and where the Catholic Bishops Conference of India's Health Commission started a community care center. In fact, for a patient to travel from Mokkama to Patna, which is the nearest city, to access the antiretroviral medicine is, in fact, the travel itself is fairly long. Therefore, we will continue to have that center there so that people from in and around that place in Mokkama continue to receive care and support. And what we have also started, another community care center in Patna itself, so people can come and stay there, go and get the medicine and get also assistance for any opportunistic infection, and go back to their home. So these are short-stay homes where people get the counselling support. Also, we take care of some nutritious food and then medicine and so on. And Government of India in the last budget, in the railway budget, they introduced free transportation system, transportation possibility through the railway for the people living with HIV/AIDS, but still though implemented. So we hope that that will help to a great extent for the people living with HIV and AIDS. It is a proposal. It has to be implemented. So we hope that that will help to a great extent for the people living with HIV and AIDS to travel and access the medicine in the major metros. In fact, as you rightly said, it is a problem still for the people from remote villages to have access.
UN figures show that worldwide, around half of those infected with HIV are now women. Is that a similar pattern there in India? Is it spreading fast among the female population?
It is true. In India, actually, women are the most vulnerable group. Sometimes the husband who is gone for a work elsewhere comes back home, but still she has even the risk of being infected. Also, the poverty is a factor, so less medical care, less attention. Ignorance is another factor. The gender disparity which is existing in the society is another major factor. So, with considering all these things, women are suffering more in comparison to with men. And then also the children, the orphan and vulnerable children, that's a major issue for the church also to be concerned about.
Many people don't even realize they are infected until it's discovered through a test.
There are recently UNAIDS came out with the statistics, and still almost 28% of people are still not fully aware of the issues connected with the virus.
And is there still a heavy stigma in India against those who are suffering from HIV/AIDS?
Definitely there is. There are cases in which children living with HIV were thrown out from the schools, or rather other parents protested that the school authorities should not keep the children. So if they keep the children, positive children, in the schools, they said, we are going to take out our children. So they had to be unfortunately removed. And even in a state like Kerala, where the literacy rate is high, but still this stigma exists. And even with the medical fraternity, unfortunately, we have cases where they refuse treatment, they don't admit them or refuse to operate upon. Pregnant women are not attended properly and so on, just because they are living with HIV and AIDS.
As I said earlier, India has the world's third largest number of HIV-positive people. But how do you see the future? Do you predict a lessening of the spread of the disease?
Health is a state subject in India. So there are some states where they have aggressively promoting awareness program in the schools, other education institutions, in communities, and we find very positive results. For example, the state of Tamil Nadu, where the government and the civil society is cooperating and trying to bring awareness among the people. And there is the recent study reveals that there is a great impact. But there are other states where it is unfortunately spreading fast. Either the government machinery is not adequately committing themselves for this. Also, maybe the NGO network, even faith-based group, they don't have a conducive atmosphere to work properly. Even for example, for us, there are states in which we find it difficult to work because the government is looking up the church with a suspicion. So we cannot take it as India's one nation. In some states, the efforts bring fruit, excellent fruit, and so the result is very encouraging, but there are states that are lagging behind.
And when it comes overall nationally to the contribution of the church in caring for and helping those suffering from HIV/AIDS, what percentage are we talking about?
With regard to the care and support, almost 25% involvement, the care and support is taken care of the church, especially the Catholic Church. We have at present 74 care and support centers, and within 1 year we'll have 45 more care and support community care centers, which is a major contribution or major response of the church in the field of care and support. The Catholic Bishops' Conference of India's Health Commission initiated a program of study in collaboration with the Indira Gandhi National Open University and introduced a study program in distant mode of learning, which is available both in Hindi and English, called HIV and Family Education, in order to bring greater awareness and train more professionals to work in the communities and so on. So the church is really doing an excellent work, though it is a minuscule community, just 2.3% of the entire population. Its presence here in the field of health and education is something remarkable, and doing a great work also in the field of HIV and AIDS.
That was Father Vada Kumthala, head of the Indian Catholic Bishops Conference's Commission for Health, speaking from New Delhi. What do an ex-gangster, a TV presenter, a former prostitute, an international rugby coach, and an archbishop have in common? Well, they all feature in a new magazine in Britain that offers a contemporary presentation of Catholic life and beliefs. Entitled Life for Seekers, the magazine has been launched this week and is the brainchild of the Catholic Inquiry Office, an agency of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. The new glossy magazine has 52 pages, and its articles include Catholic Teaching on Sex, Problem Page, Convent Kitchen, and Sacred Melody. Church officials say Life for Seekers provides a pioneering illustration of how the Catholic faith is rooted and finds expression in contemporary culture, and is packed with information about living life to the full. The editor of the new magazine is Claire Ward, who works for the Catholic Agency to Support Evangelisation. She spoke to me about the main aims of this publication.
Its main aim is to provide an overview, really, of contemporary Catholic life to those people who are not members of the Catholic faith, the Catholic Church, but are interested and open to finding out more. What we've tried to do is provide an attractive, accessible, easy to read, but also informative, summary resource that people can pick up and read on the bus, on the metro, and wherever they find themselves without any sense of embarrassment.
So how did you choose the title?
Well, we are responsible for the Catholic Inquiry Office. We are an agency of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, and we, a couple of years ago, were asked to develop the work of the Catholic Inquiry Office, and we felt that it needed to be rebranded in a way that would capture people's imagination. And so because of that, we worked very hard on creating a brand new website for non-Catholic inquirers, which has over 60 pages of free information online about Catholic life, Catholic beliefs. And that's been going very, very successfully. It's one of the most successful evangelistic websites in England and Wales. We thought, well, if it's working, let's expand what we're offering to inquirers and do something in printed format which matches what they found on the web version of our work. It's an extension of our website presence, but in a printed format.
Now, of course, in Britain there are existing Catholic magazines or papers like The Tablet and The Catholic Herald. So how does yours vary? Is it very much, as you said earlier, pitched at non-Catholics, whereas these existing publications are very much for those perhaps already in the know?
I think if you did ask a member of the Catholic press here, they would be very quick to say that they see their work as both for the Catholic community and for those who are not members of the church. Many of the Catholic press in this country have readers who are not baptised Catholics, but people who are interested. Where we come in is that we are not a weekly publication. We're in no means any competition to the existing excellent publications that are available. But what we felt there was a gap was for a one-stop shop where people, rather than finding news, could find an attractive catechetical summary in a magazine format of the basics of the Catholic faith. So from that point of view, this new magazine, which is tailor-made for the inquiring mind, for seekers, for spiritual seekers, is quite different to the news agenda and the excellent work that the weekly and monthly Catholic papers do in this country. We've already a history of responding to 2,000 or 3,000 inquirers annually, so this will supplement what we send out to them as an initial inquirer pack.
Now, it's certainly a glossy publication. You've got contributions by some fairly high-profile people, like a famous TV presenter, a rugby coach, a former prostitute, and an ex-gangster. What criteria did you use for selecting these contributors?
Well, I think at the heart of the spirit of the new evangelization that Pope John Paul II really invited the Church to engage in was to be very creative in the means and expressions that we use to communicate our faith. And he also taught in many of his teachings that we need as a missionary church to go out and meet people where they're at. We need to go into the marketplace and be talking in a language and using signs and symbols that our non-Catholic brothers and sisters can understand. So that was very much our inspiration for this magazine and our starting point. We then did research and said, well, okay, where are people at? What are they interested in? What kind of images and pictures appeal to them? And we worked from there, trying to bridge this gap between what can sometimes see institutionalized distant church into people's everyday lives. So quite simply, we went into the supermarkets, looked at what was on the shelves, and tried to learn, really, from the very good design work, the very good writing skills of the people doing secular publications, and apply that to the best of our ability in service of communicating the gospel and the Catholic faith. So that's what we've tried to do.
Your managing editor said about this magazine that if you thought that being a Catholic was only about observing rules and regulations, then life for seekers is likely to turn that understanding totally upside down. Can you elaborate further on that?
Certainly. In this country, many of the messages that ordinary people receive from the media about the Catholic faith is that it's about restriction and it's about rules and regulations. And of course, what we know as Catholics is at the heart of our faith is a call to embrace the fullness of life. It's quite the opposite of being restrictive and tying you down, but of being a faith that leads to inner and outer freedom in every sense. And so what we want to communicate through this magazine is to challenge some of those misconceptions and to show through this publication, through the testimonies, through the way it's written, that the heart of Catholicism is this call to the fullness of life, as you read in John's Gospel. And so the whole thrust of the magazine, if you like, the dominant message of the magazine, is that the heart of Catholicism, if you're looking for the fullness of life, Catholicism and the teachings of Jesus Christ and the church that he founded is where that life is to be found.
Now, what kind of feedback have you had from those who've seen the advanced copies? Can you give me any actual comments that you have received about it?
Yes, we obviously did some very, very careful market research because we were very clear that this magazine is in no sense about dumbing down any aspect of the riches of the teachings of the church. So it's been a very, very careful 2-year planning process before we've actually got to this stage of publication. We liaised with both existing Catholic writers and publicists and designers. We liaised with, obviously, the non-Catholic inquirers that we try and serve through our work in the Catholic Inquiry Office. And we moulded the magazine and the articles around the questions that we've already been receiving from people who are not members of our church. So it isn't just a sense of a few good-hearted people going in an office and putting together what they thought might be appealing. A lot of research has gone behind this in terms of content and in terms of how it's presented. And all the way through, that's been happening. It's been a process of engagement, dialogue, and using different people's talents. The feedback then that we have received has been extremely positive. Catholics, we've had no adverse comment whatsoever. We've a string of endorsements from people who've really enjoyed it so much that they've wanted to try and support this new publication and try and get it out there. So what we're hoping is that as many non-Catholic people will hear that the magazine exists and will be invited to order a copy for free, and that Catholic parishes will hear about the magazine and perhaps be inspired to order some to use for evangelistic outreach, whether it's in schools, whether it's at parishes, or whether it's ordinary Catholics leaving them in the workplace.
So what's your print run?
In our initial print run, just to get things off the ground, is 5,000 copies, although what we are hoping is that's just a pilot and that the demand is such, and I can certainly envisage this from the response so far, that we're going to have to get many, many more copies done in the very near future. Such has been the excellent response that we've had so far.
That was Claire Ward, editor of the new Catholic magazine, Life for Seekers. And you can find out more about this new magazine by going to the link www.lifeforseekers.co.uk. Life for Seekers is written all as one word, with four written there in the middle as a numeral. Before ending our programme today, here's a brief update on some of the latest church news. Lydia Kane reports.
The countdown to World Youth Day is on, and in preparation, 30 young people from dioceses across England and Wales are being trained as World Youth Day communications officers. Over 13 dioceses will be sending officers to Sydney in July. Philippa Hitchin spoke to Bishop Kieran Connery of Arundel and Brighton about the training sessions.
The purpose of the training was to, first of all, give them a range of skills, so writing skills, speaking skills, listening skills, and to be able to talk to other young people in Sydney and get their views and impressions, their experiences down, both on paper, on disc, on tape, and even indeed to film them. So it was to give them all those skills, but also to try and give them skills in coaxing other young people to speak about themselves. So it was a whole range of skills, not just technical in terms of mechanical, but also in terms of what they're there for, what they can share with others who are not going. Again, to convey the good experience we hope they'll have.
And so they're expected to send back press releases, audio files, films,
yes,
perhaps?
Yes, we're taking a film cameraman with us, with a film recorder. That'll be obviously on disc, but now they'll be using all those things, yes, audio files, video files, and written statements. We hope all that will come back on a daily basis. It won't just be at the end of the 2 weeks, but each day to send back and say, this is what's happening today.
And you can hear a full version of that interview with Bishop Kieran Connery of Arundel and Brighton on tomorrow's feature programme with Philippa Hitchin. And that's all from the English programme for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.